interesting what we consider a reason to get angry.
He's a military strategist on health.
Merck, the pharmaceutical company, killed 55,000 people with Vioxx. They knew that it had a problem, and they sold it to people anyway, and 55,000 plus people died taking Vioxx.
He's Carl Lenore.
Why isn't this current administration going, we need to go to White House Station, New Jersey, where the Merck headquarters is, and send the military in there? We need to bomb Merck, because they killed 55,000 Americans knowing that they were going to kill 55,000 Americans.
On Superhuman Radio.
Where is the outrage about this?
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. It's a very special day here at the helm of the Superhuman Nation because I get to spend the next hour with a guy who I consider one of my best friends who I've never had the chance to sit down and eat with or sit across from, and that's Adele Moussa for the Subversity Science Roundup. How you doing, Adele?
I'm actually a bit fatigued, but otherwise I'm feeling good. And we really have to do that in the future to actually sit together. I mean, even our birthdays are almost on the same day, so that's quite astonishing that we didn't manage to meet in person.
Well, and now that you said that, I owe you an apology because I've missed your birthday this year, and I always make a big deal about your birthday. And this year, the month of June was just overwhelming for me, and it wasn't until, I want to say, sometime in July, and I realized, oh, my God, I missed Adele's birthday. And I want to apologize to you for that on the air, but also wish you a very happy belated birthday.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to enjoy the rest of the year.
There you go. So anyway, there's always a lot of great things going on in your mind. And one of the things that I've learned, because I read, while I don't comment a lot about your posts, I do read a lot of them. And I never realized, I think everybody agrees that your ability to distill down and summarize science and your use of colloquial English and you're a master communicator. There's no doubt about that. But some of the articles that you write are years in the making. You actually stockpile research because you know that there's going to be a study published at some point in time that will be able to allow you to connect all these dots. And some of the articles you write, they are literally years in the making, aren't they?
Well, I wouldn't say they are years in the making in terms of actually working on them for a year. But you are right. Whenever I find a study that is interesting, I'm saving it on my hard disk in a folder which I can later on search for. First of all, related studies. So if I read something more recent and I remember the study, I can look it up directly. And second of all, it is sometimes like that I think, well, the study sounds interesting, but I can't really say something specific about the implications of the results. So just writing about it, just summarizing and maybe copying some of the figures from the original text is not really enough to write a good article. And this is where you get the delay between finding the study and publishing it or writing about it later on, which may in fact be a year. And sometimes I also find older studies and write about them right away. So sometimes there's a study that has been published in maybe 20 years ago. But I think that, well, you didn't know that. Probably people don't know that either. That's really worth writing about.
And this speaks to something that I feel, and I want you to correct me if you feel I'm wrong about this, but I really feel that science no longer builds upon itself. We only see what is being released today, the science du jour, and we ignore anything that we've known from the past and how it plays into science du jour. Am I off base about that, or do you notice that as well?
No, I think you're unfortunately right. And I also have to say that I'm guilty as well of focusing too much on what's the latest science, especially in the field of fitness, health, and nutrition. This is a very prevalent thing that because people are more willing to accept that what we know is, for example, the best way to eat changes, much in contrast to, for example, physics. I mean that every object is going to fall at the same speed as long as you drop it on Earth is something you will learn once, and when somebody told you that this is no longer true, you will probably not believe him. But if somebody told you that protein makes you fat, and you have learned or have been indoctrinated for before that it's fat that's making you fat, and then it's all of a sudden carbohydrates, then you are more willing to accept the new trend in research or the new revelation that it's protein that's going to make you fat. And I think that this is why, especially with the rise of social media, there are constantly those new trends that are then spiked up with science and get the new thing.
Well, it's interesting that you invoke the protein makes you fat discussion, because we actually have the authors from Australia who recently published a paper saying that it's red meat that's making people fat. And have you seen the paper? You know what I'm talking about?
I think I've seen it on Science Daily, the original paper, but the headline. Yeah.
Right. So, but what I find astonishing is, anything will make you fat if you're in a caloric excess based on your energy output. Sugar. I mean, look, if you're burning 2,500 calories a day and you're eating 1,000 calories a day, and I don't care if it's sugar, I don't care if it's fat, I don't care if it's protein, all of the above, you're going to lose weight. But if you're burning 2,500 calories a day and you're eating exclusively protein, and or fat, and you're consuming 4,000 calories a day in, I don't care, protein, fat, or all of the above, you're going to get fat. So why are we so astonished that red meat could be contributing to obesity? Why does it even need to be a study?
Well, I think that the actual problem is that people don't see or don't understand that the intake with this expenditure equation can still yield the very same result if the two inputs they believe they knew were totally different. So if you for example, eat 1,000 calories and expend 2,000, you should end up at a deficit of 1,000. If you consume 1,500 calories and expend the same 2,000, there should be a significant difference, with 500 calories as a difference between the deficit in which you are. Now, the problem, however, is that the change in the input, for example, will also change your energy you will expend. So there are very complicated feedback mechanisms in place, and while many people will relatively easily acknowledge, for example, that eating more protein is going to increase your thermogenesis, they tend to forget that the effects like these really may actually explain a phenomena they can't understand. For example, that if you increase your protein intake, I just remembered the studies by Jose Antonio, which are quite interesting, that show if you eat more protein, you are going to rather lose weight and especially lose body fat. Although the caloric intake appeared to be identical to the lower protein diet, what changed was, however, these two main input factors, because even though the intake did not really increase, the change in macronutrient composition had an effect on the expenditure, or at least on the expenditure or where the energy came from. So if it's by tapping into your fat stores, or if you are rather getting the energy from all organs at an equal rate.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Okay, so let's move on to something that's also equally interesting. In the Subversity blog, which is, for those of you who've never been there, and I can't believe anybody's not been there, subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. You recently posted an article about a study quantifies disadvantages of doing cardio and weights on the same day. Your fat loss may stall completely. That's counterintuitive and really counter to brotelligence or bro science, because everybody wants to do, you know, they'll train in the morning, they'll do cardio after that, then they'll come back and do cardio later in the evening because they're trying to lose more body fat. What does this study show?
Well, the interesting thing is, obviously, we have to go back, first of all, to the question of calories in versus calories out. And this was, quote-unquote, identical for both groups. We all know that you won't have exactly identical values in two groups of people, but there was no statistical significant difference between the two. So the expectation would have been that the changes in body weight, for example, should be the same. So if they ate enough or eat the same amount and both eat enough, the weight shouldn't change at all. If they consume more than they need, then the weight should increase, and it should decrease if they eat less than they eat. Now, the problem with this study was that the results clearly indicated that the amount of lean muscle tissue the trainees gained, and even the strengths were pretty similar. So there was no difference at all in terms of the strength gains, and there was a slight advantage, but not a significant one for the strength gains. The interesting thing, however, was that there was a significant loss of body fat in those who trained on separate days, while there was no change in body fat at all in the others. And this is something that is obviously quite hard to explain if you make the assumptions we have made before, which were related to the difference or the net balance in terms of energy balance. So you can't really explain the difference, at least not if you don't go beyond the idea of the main determinants are intake with expenditure and start to investigate other factors, like, for example, stress, the hormonal response, or right, what the timing of the workout does, for example, to other things, like if I have trained already for 3 hours, I'm probably going to sit the rest of the day on the couch. But if I've been training only for half an hour and still have a lot of energy, I may decide that it's such a nice day and I will spend another 2 hours outside walking or maybe taking the dog for a walk or doing whatever else. And that's actually something that is also not often assessed very carefully and still very important. The amount of energy you spend while you're working out is often overestimated, at least its contribution to your total calorie balance, while the amount of energy you need for just sitting there and fiddling around or maybe going from place A to place B is often underestimated. And those are also affected by working out, not directly but indirectly, because you would, for example, not go out again after a very strenuous workout, or you would maybe do that and still expend less energy even during the same activity, which is something that has been investigated in other studies that try to elucidate why people actually don't continuously lose weight or have a very hard time keeping the weight off. One of the things they found is that for a certain activity, your energy expenditure is decreasing in response to certain behaviors, right, like starving yourself or having worked out for 3 hours just a day before or things like that.
What about the notion from an evolutionary perspective that the body interprets this stress as the environment is hostile and it starts to shut down the basal metabolic rate in a protective mechanism? So there's a very, like we see this in women especially. There's been some research that shows that women who train excessively, their stress levels actually drop their basal metabolic rates and make it more difficult for them to lose body fat. I would imagine that men have that threshold as well. What about that notion that if you're just training way too much, your body is going to compensate by trying to conserve energy?
Yep, that is a problem, obviously. And you're also, interestingly enough, you're also getting more efficient by positive training, not because you train too much. But also, somebody who is a trained runner, he will expend much less energy for the same, for running the same distance at the same speed than somebody who is untrained. Because he's working, or his muscles are going to work more efficiently than those of somebody who is untrained. So there are so many input variables that have an effect on first of all, whether you're going to lose or to gain weight, and second of all, whether that's going to happen in form of muscles or in form of fat. And especially in women, the effects are often relatively rapid, or you can see an adaptational response in terms of the resting metabolic rate, but also the energy that is expended during activities. Well, usually earlier in women than you would see it in men. And they are also the ones who will notice it first, because one of the main problems of women who are working out is that they have irregular or no period at all. And this is obviously one of the most significant signs that you have hormonal problems.
Interesting. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's move on to another hot topic on your blog. We're talking with Adele Moussa today. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. If you've not been there before, Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. It's where everybody who wants to know the truth about science goes to get their answers. Stay tuned.
Products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See eye drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using Can-See eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit Can-See eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. Can-See eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse Can-See eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how Can-See eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
The category killer is back. Mass Pro Synthogen, with results literally from workout one. You'll recover like you're a teenager again. If you've been pouring your heart out in the gym with little to nothing to show for it, you owe it to yourself to see the performance-enhancing and cosmetic effects it can make almost immediately. One user said, "I wish I could have tried it sooner. I just ordered two more bottles." And another, "The overall single best bodybuilding supplement I have personally ever used." Visit CoachRobRegis.com or PredatorNutrition.com to learn more today. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
A legendary name in hardcore supplementation. Iron Mag Labs. 100% original, patent pending Andro compound. The most effective, hardcore, groundbreaking bodybuilding supplements in the world. Iron Mag Labs. Revolutionizing hardcore supplementation for more than a decade. Visit IronMagLabs.com. Iron Mag Labs.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back to the Subversity Science Roundup. If you want to try a ketone supplement, go to superhumanradio.com and try the Keto OS today. Take advantage of the 5-day experience, the most convenient, greatest tasting ketone supplement on the market. Check it out. Go to superhumanradio.com today. We're talking with Adele Moussa. So Adele, let's stay with the whole cardio thing for a second longer. You sent me another study that shows that the requirements for essential amino acids are affected by cardio. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's actually also a relatively new study. People may have seen on social media before because few people posted it on their world. So if you are following some of the fitness professionals, you may already know the study. It is actually, unfortunately also, just a study that has been done in rodents that has the advantage of being tightly controlled, but the disadvantage of being questionable in terms of its interpretation for human beings. What is still quite intriguing is that the difference between the rodents that were trained before ingesting a certain amount of essential amino acids and the one that has been sitting around is really significant, with 45% more essential amino acids being required by those who have just done cardio, quote-unquote, before. And interestingly enough, no difference between completely sedentary rats and those who were trained but who didn't train on the very same day. So this is something that brings us back to the previous study we've been talking about with training on a different day, about which I would like to say that if you take a look at the implication, it's not as black and white as it may seem at first, because you can still maybe see better effects if you train, for example, twice a day, or if you train, for example, both types, cardio and resistance training, on one day, if the volume and or other factors differ due to that. For example, if you only have 3 days a week you can train, you use them to spend maybe 15 minutes on weight training, it will be a different result and probably also more fat loss if you add another half hour of cardio. So the implications are not always 100% clear. Uh-huh. It's also especially important not to take just one study into account, but multiple. So for example, the rodent study I just talked about, the one where you saw the rodents gain significantly more protein mass when they consume more essential amino acids, it is something that tells you anything about how this is going to work in humans. Only if you take a look at other studies and know, for example, what the equivalent for a human being would be and what the difference, to which extent the difference translates to human beings.
So, but assuming there is some efficacy in this research, or accuracy, I should say, as it translates to human beings, I know that you are not a fan of free-form amino acids in general, and you have even written extensively about their ability to even perhaps affect depression in some people. So when we talk about these EAAs, we're really just talking about if you're going to do the cardio on the days that you train as well, let's say, if getting back to the previous subject, you're just going to need more protein then, it sounds like, or whole proteins.
Yeah, certainly. We don't know if that's related to the so-called leucine threshold, that you need only more leucine, which could be possible. But it's most probable that the simple reason is that the decrease in amino acids that is a result of the oxidation or the use of amino acids as a fuel while you work out makes it more important to fill the levels back in order to achieve a certain level of amino acids in the blood. It is also possible that it's simply possible to increase the protein synthetic response further because you are, quote-unquote, more anabolic due to having worked out just before ingesting the essential amino acids. But I think it's really important that you pointed out that you still get all of them, or in this study at least, the rodents got all of it, which is quite different from loading on BCAAs only.
So, aside from BCAA, I mean, just give the synopsis. You've written extensively on free-form amino acids. Do you have a succinct position on are they good, and if so, when, conditional? And obviously EAAs we're talking about, not BCAAs. I've never been a proponent of BCAAs because my analogy has been it's like calling the workers into work but not having any bricks and cement for them to build the wall. You need other amino acids to actually cause the protein synthetic response that you're calling for. But do you feel that free-form amino acids play a role, any sort of beneficial role at all?
I personally think that there is no clear benefit compared to other complete protein sources. I mean, probably you can get away with a few grams less if you have an essential amino acid product in the free-form versus a whey protein, for example. Because if you have 30 grams of whey protein, there's going to be not 30 grams of protein in it, but also other nutrients. So you're essentially getting more protein if you only count amino acids if you ingest an essential or EAA supplement compared to a protein powder. Plus, you don't even have the guarantee that you get any of the amino acids in the protein powder. If you take a look at the recently published or at least publicized results of tests of protein products that did not contain the declared amount of protein.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue, and that's very frustrating because the reality is that it's causing people not to trust protein supplements in general now.
Yes, the real problem is also, I mean, you can have this issue with whatever you buy. So, first of all, you have a natural variation in natural products, but there's obviously more to this than just a natural variation. And, I mean, who tells you that your essential amino acid product has the number of amino acids it says on the packaging?
Well,
so you will have to trust, at least to some extent, the people you are buying your protein products from.
Well, and the other thing about free-form amino acids, I have a hard time consuming them, not just because they generally, as a rule, taste pretty poor, but the large majority of free-form amino acids that come from China, they are basically derived from the feathers of birds. So, in other words, we're talking about some really, really grotesque, crappy sources that just because they're able to isolate them and turn them into a free form, you know, the argument is, well, they don't really keep any of their original attributes. But still, the idea that it's coming from the feathers of birds, it's like, what's next? We take it from hair from humans and make free-form amino acids out of them that people can take? There's something just really repulsive about that to me. I don't know why.
wasn't there a news about cockroach milk the other day?
Yes,
that they wanted to milk cockroaches or things like that.
Well, but it's not. It's silly because they don't want to milk the cockroach. They want to synthetically produce the milk that's found in a crystalline form inside of a cockroach, which takes it to a new absurd level.
I didn't know that. Well, that's even better, quote unquote, better than what I understood, because I just read the headline and the first paragraph, and I thought they are actually milking them. But they would have to do that in order to understand the chemical makeup, so they must have done it before.
Yeah.
The reason I bring this up is I don't think that that there is a significant effect on how a product affects you as long as the chemical structure is identical. And you are still right that if you think about it, and if you also take into consideration how essential amino acids taste, this is another clear advantage for a protein powder with a high concentration of essential amino acids. The difference is the structure of the amino acids. If they are individual, you can taste each of them. If they are bound in a protein, your taste buds will interact with the protein, and this will taste completely different. And especially things like methionine and other amino acids, they taste really disgusting.
Yeah, and it's interesting. They use methionine for protein spiking, too. I want to take a break, and then when we come back, I want to talk about energy expenditure and weight control. Is the biggest loser the best loser? Because that the biggest loser concept has been around now, and really, I have some opinions that I want to hear what you have to say about this particular research, okay?
Yeah, all right.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup here at Superhuman Radio.
Prime Nutrition is proud to present Max HP, their most scientifically formulated pre-workout supplement to date, now available in two great tasting flavors, Tropic Fruit and Raspberry. Max HP is the most ultra-premium pre-workout available and is made without any artificial colors, flavors, or dye. Increasing blood flow to heighten anabolic activity, Max HP is designed to meet the heightened metabolic needs of high-performance athletes. Visit PrimeNutrition.com and use coupon code SUPERHUMANRADIO to receive 20% off of your entire order. Go to PrimeNutrition.com today.
The category killer is back. Mass Pro Synthogen, with results literally from workout one. You'll recover like you're a teenager again. If you've been pouring your heart out in the gym with little to nothing to show for it, you owe it to yourself to see the performance-enhancing and cosmetic effects it can make almost immediately. One user said, "I wish I could have tried it sooner. I just ordered two more bottles." And another, "The overall single best bodybuilding supplement I have personally ever used." Visit CoachRobRegish.com or PredatorNutrition.com to learn more today. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
From the makers of GLC 2000, now comes Actistatin Pro Athlete. The Actistatin formula gives you all four forms of glucosamine and chondroitin, plus Actistatin's triple patented delivery method to optimize cellular uptake and utilization of glucosamines, chondroitin, ascorbate, and manganese. Regenerate and maintain cartilage, promote joint mobility and flexibility, replenish lost collagen. Get 20% off your next order using the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the GLC banner ad today. Push the limits. Feel the difference with Actistatin.
What do professional athletes such as Kobe Bryant and A-list celebrities such as Selma Hayek have in common? They are all touting the benefits of bone broth. But unless you have countless hours to cook every week or can hire your own personal chef, you're probably missing out on these critical nutrients. Osteobroth is a high-protein, standardized, consistent bone broth in a convenient powdered form. Use promo code SHR for 20% off at osteobroth.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com. 4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. Talking with Adele Moussa from subversity.com. So, another interesting study that you forwarded to me that I'd like to discuss is energy expenditure and weight control. Is the biggest loser the best loser? Talk about that.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting comment, and it refers to a study that has been published, I think, ahead of print 2 months ago, and people may have seen it being called the Hall study because one of the lead authors is called Hall. And it has been conducted at the National Institute of Health and used a data set from the original Biggest Losers, so those people who are participating in the show in the U.S. And if you don't remember what this was all about, basically you had those competitors in the Biggest Loser show try to lose as much weight as possible. The one who is the biggest loser, the one who's losing the highest amount of weight, would win the show. And the idea was to achieve that by being trained and coached by experts in nutrition and in exercise science. And if you look at, take a look at the protocol, you will notice that they are trying the usual route of eating less and expending more energy. And they were also quite successful. I mean, within those 30 weeks on the show, the average subject lost 47 kilograms of body fat. And that's quite a significant amount because the average participant was starting with only roughly 70 kilograms. And if you lose 47%, you go from a body fat percentage of 49 to a body fat percentage of 28%. So they really changed. And if you've seen the show or at least the before and after pictures, you will probably know that they had a real great success.
But they had really great success getting the scale or their representation of gravity on the scale to change. But what about muscle loss?
Yeah.
What about muscle loss?
Interestingly enough, the muscle loss was not that exorbitant. Therefore,
really?
The body fat percentage increased that much. They also lost muscle, but only 11 kilograms. So roughly four times the amount of body fat was lost compared to the fat-free mass. So it's not like they lost all their muscle mass, and therefore it's quite clear that they would yo-yo back up right after the show. But still, if you take a look at the weight development, they ended up at almost the same body fat percentage after 6 years. And this is where the current study actually looked at them. After a follow-up of 6 years, they sent them scales, and they had to step on it every day for 2 weeks in order to see how or if they were weight stable when they actually came to the follow-up. So the idea was to see or to compare, first of all, obviously, what happened in the time between the two assessments, but also to compare the energy expenditure, weight, body composition, all the things they measured right after the competition to what would happen if you have presumably been weight stable for at least a longer period of time.
So, essentially, their metabolic rate has changed as a result of this weight loss, correct?
Right. So, obviously, if you weigh more, you will have to consume more energy because your requirements are higher. But one of the things the original Biggest Loser experiment has already confirmed, and we knew you already all will know that, is that you don't have this totally linear relationship between the amount of body weight and the amount of energy you need. So they already have a mismatch between the actually measured and the mathematically predicted metabolic rates. And this difference changed over the course of the competition, where the people ended up expending roughly 300 kilocalories per day less than they would be expected based on their weight. Now, the interesting thing is that one of the possible outcomes of the follow-up obviously was that they found that if the weight went back up, they would be at the same energy expenditure levels or energy requirement levels as they had been before. And while this is, at least statistically speaking, the case, if you compare the prediction, and the prediction, again, is based on what the people weigh, if you take a look at the actual figures, the ones that they measured, however, you will see that the mismatch between the prediction and the actually measured energy expenditure, which you could say is the metabolic adaptation, so how much did they adapt their metabolism to the new situation, it increased. Mm-hmm. So while we had deficit or a difference, a mismatch, a metabolic adaptation of 275 kilocalories per day after the competition, after or at the 6 year follow-up, it wasn't improving but rather getting worse.
Wow.
With 500 kilocalories per day being the new mismatch or the new metabolic adaptation.
And many years ago, you wrote about the changes in the brain that occur from obesity that could influence metabolic rate. I remember, this is quite a few years ago, you wrote a blog post about that. Do you know what, remember what I'm talking about?
I wrote several, yeah.
So could this alteration be explained by the brain wanting to stay fat and changing to try to return to what it thinks its new normal is?
Well, it's not quite clear if that's located or situated in the brain, but the actual problem appears really to be related to changes that in what people often call the a threshold weight that body wants to return to.
Uh-huh.
The one thing that is quite clear is that this is also different if you take a look at the resting metabolic rate and the non-resting component of the metabolic rate. And if you think about the brain, you probably will also think about leptin and the effects of leptin on the brain. And what scientists have found after initially hoping that leptin would solve the whole obesity problem was that when they administered it to people who are losing weight, then they are really able to restore a normal non-resting, so activity-related energy expenditure. What is quite interesting, however, is that leptin has not been able to counter the effect on the basal metabolic rate, so the amount of energy you consume or you need when you're not moving, not doing anything.
Right.
And this is something we still haven't figured out, but in relation to the latest Biggest Loser study, other scientists have tried to find out which model we can at least use to predict how much energy you're going to need less when, if you lose, for example, 1 kilogram of body weight, how much into how many calories is this going to translate. And what is interesting is that they found in their subjects that there is a relatively fast initial decline, and it's not as you would expect it. This initial decline has different components. So it has a resting component, and it also has this the total value, which is different because to the resting component you will have to add the adaptation that occurs in response to, for example, being less active or expending less energy while you are active. And if you take a look at that data, you will see that it's not as you would expect that everything depends only on the lean muscle tissue. Rather than that, both the fat mass and the lean mass have an effect on the energy expenditure. And it's also not a linear effect, not as you would expect, like every kilogram lost is going to affect your metabolic rate by reducing it by maybe 5 kilocalories or whatever. But rather than that, there is a very complex pattern that doesn't compare to any of the models the scientists had in mind. There's first of all the relatively simple one you would probably also expect, where you have where for every kilogram lost you would reduce the metabolic rate by, let's say, 10 kilocalories.
Right.
They call it the mechanical model. Then there's another one most of you will probably heard about, which is the threshold model, which means as soon as you are dropping beneath your quote-unquote normal weight, there's going to be a significant increase in the energy you will expend less per kilocalorie. For example, you lose those 10 kilocalories per kilogram up until you are at 50% of what's the your threshold value. So, for example, you are then suddenly with every kilo you lose, now that you are already very lean, you are going to reduce your energy expenditure by 20, not just by 10 kilocalories. And what the scientists found was that neither of the two actually applied, and it's also not there's also not a clear relationship between the amount of weight you've already lost and the amount of energy that is reduced per additional kilograms, because you could expect, for example, that at the very beginning there is no change at all, or almost no change, and if the weight loss becomes more significant, there could be more a further reduction with each kilo you have lost. So, for example, you start at 100 kilograms, lose the first kilo, and it doesn't change at all. After you've already lost maybe 40 kilograms and you lose another one, this is a change of 10 kilocalories.
Oh.
And
do you postulate that that effect could be somehow circumvented by bringing weight down and then staying? You know, a lot of people talk about this plateau. Do you think that that could be circumvented by bringing your weight down to, let's say, some amount before a lack of a dramatic change occurs, and then staying there for a while and letting the body say that that is the new norm?
Yeah, that is a theory you will hear relatively often, but unfortunately I haven't seen any evidence that would confirm it. You have people who manage to stay at their lower body weight, but usually we'll also see that they are living a different life then. And the same thing goes for those who don't manage to stay at the same weight. I mean, for example, the Biggest Losers in the study, they went back to their their natural environment, the one that is very different from the protected environment in the show. And they bounce back up to almost the same weight where they came from. So it's very difficult to say whether this is environmental or not. The hope people have is actually that time will help, because the idea is a bit related to a possible explanation that is unrelated to the brain, but rather to the fat cells. The idea is that you have a given number of fat cells, and as soon as they are emptying, they are going to produce, for example, less leptin. And so as the emptier the fat cells are, the less energy you're going to expend per kilogram of body weight, which implies that before you, A, go back to your quote-unquote weight or regular weight, and thus the same filling level of the fat cells, you are not going to have the same energy expenditure per kilogram of body weight.
That's interesting.
On the other hand, the hope is that if you keep the fat off, some of the fat cells obviously die, like every cell in your body has a limited lifetime. And it's, the speculation is that if it's not going to be replaced and one cell after the other is going to die, the level or the filling of the existing fat cells is going to increase. And you will have each of the cells filled with as much fat as you would if you weighed much more.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So it is possible that this is also actually working in your favor, but that's not something we really have been able to confirm.
I want to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, I want to change the subject. I want to talk about cluster training. You wrote a nice blog about that, and let's talk a little bit about strength training for a second instead of more fat loss. Stay tuned. You're listening to Subversity Science Roundup. We'll be right back.
You know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide. Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advance banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. Let's face it, we could talk about fat loss forever and ever, but who cares how lean you are?
I still would like to add one thing to the discussion, because I think that people are now asking themselves, well, what did I learn today? What can I do? And I think that one important thing you have to understand is, and also you have to understand in order to understand why scientists are still trying to figure out whether this is a how the link actually works is that, I mean, we all know that you can lose weight, and that's one of the most significant and also most important results of the Biggest Loser show, is that people can lose a lot of weight. Even those who already feel and believe that they are a failure, they all lost a significant amount of weight, and also enough weight to improve their health significantly. I mean, we have seen studies showing that even a weight loss of only 5% can make you significantly more healthier. So the main message is that you can change your weight and you can improve your health, but you will have to understand that this works by setting the right environment, and this environment will have to evolve as well. So people know that after a certain time period, you will have to increase your calorie deficit in order to keep losing weight. So it is quite clear that the same diet that brought you down to a certain weight can't or does not necessarily sustain this weight. So what you have to keep in mind is that your task is to modulate and change the environment constantly, to tweak it constantly. There's not this one diet you're going to follow that's going to keep you lean and ripped for the rest of your life. It will have to evolve as you evolve and you change. And I think that people really have to come to terms with this necessity of being constantly modifying or tweaking what they are doing. And this also implies you have to let go of the idea that you buy one diet book, you learn it by heart, and eat exactly what's in this diet book for the rest of your life, and you stay at the same weight.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that's the problem right now, because people... They do things that are not sustainable for long term. And look at the Biggest Loser. I mean, why couldn't those people go home and keep doing that? They just can't. So,
of course not. Yeah.
Let's talk about cluster training for a second. So this is actually a very interesting article. It's reminiscent of something that I tried many years ago when I was powerlifting. Talk about this study on cluster training, and then I've got some comments.
Well, basically what they did is they had a group of 46 male subjects who had already been trained before, but nothing you would call a pro trainee, and they had them do squats. And they had them do the exact same number of squats with the exact same weights, meaning the exact percentage of their maximal weight. And the one thing they changed in the different groups of the subjects was whether you would do your three sets of six, all six repetitions right after each other. So maybe if you have a total time or you need 2 seconds per repetition, you would train for 12 seconds for every set. Or you would cluster those repetitions, meaning you would do one repetition, then you would wait 25 seconds and do the next one. And this is, as you said, not exactly a revolutionary new technique, but rather a form of training that has been used by strength trainees for years. And you will probably have seen it in some periodization scheme before. And the idea was that the scientists expected them or the subjects to become significantly stronger when they would train with the cluster system.
Okay, sorry. So I actually experimented with something very similar to this back in 2005. And it was just really it was considered heavy singles. But you would say, let's say your deadlift. You would take, let's say, 405 pounds, and you would do a single with it, and then you would wait, let's say, 30 seconds, and then you would do another single with it. You do this 10 times. So you do 10 singles separated by a 30-second rest period in between repetitions. And you would do that for 2 weeks. Then on week three, you would do the same exact weight. But now you would shorten your rest in between to 20 seconds. And you would continue to shave 5 to 10 seconds off the rest period over the course of 16 weeks. And the idea was, at some point in time, you would be able to do 10 continuous reps with 405, which embarking on this exercise experiment, you would not be able to do. This is kind of similar to this whole cluster training, isn't it? I mean,
only difference is that the progression, you progress differently. So in your case, your progression is in the rest times. So you are going to reduce the time between the different reps, and thus you will increase the intensity still. So because the workers are going to feel more intense if you are doing one squat or if you are not resting between the different reps. For squats or for bench presses or whatever you are doing. And the difference to the study here was that they still had the subjects increase their weight whenever they were able to do the prescribed number of repetitions. So the progression here is in terms of weight.
Right.
Obviously, the outcome is pretty much the same because if you take a look at the results, you will see that there is a significant increase in how this affected their strength. What I like about your idea, though, is that I personally think that this could be a better way to do it in order to have a similar stimulus while you train. Because if you take a closer look at the results, you will see that there is, interestingly enough, a significant advantage of doing the cluster training compared to a classic hypertrophy training. So if the alternative is doing 5 sets of 10... and doing what you would call a classic hypertrophy training, then it is significantly more effective to cluster. If, on the other hand, you compare the doing your 6 repetitions per set in a row or with in an intermediate 25-second break, you will see that the actual increase in strength you can measure is the same, more or less.
As the cluster training.
But
this is silly, and I tell you why I think it's silly, right? Hypertrophy training is not supposed to make you stronger. And we all know that hypertrophy training does not necessarily make you stronger. It makes your muscles larger. And so it's almost like saying that someone is surprised that a sports car cannot perform the way an SUV can on the back roads. And they go, well, see this, well, the sports car is not made for the back roads. And hypertrophy training isn't made for strength gains. It's made to create larger muscles, structural changes that are visible, not necessarily that activate when you lift weights.
Yeah, I would agree. But on the other hand, you will see, or you will easily find studies that show very similar effects of the strength training in the 6 rep range and the hypertrophy training in the 10 to 12 rep ranges. And this is also why the scientists did not really expect to see a significant difference between the hypertrophy training and the strength training. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they had obviously hoped for significant differences between the cluster training and the strength training. So adding the intercept rest period did not really yield the beneficial results the scientists had hoped for. On the other hand, the study confirms that training specificity works. So work, I mean, if we classify the training regime or what you are training for in only 3 categories, and say, for example, you have muscle gains, you have strength gains, and you have fat loss, then you would probably see people prescribe or suggest very different workouts. So a strength workout, a hypertrophy workout, and a fat loss workout. And what the study at hand at least confirms is that it really makes sense to have a goal-specific workout. What it does not confirm, well, you could say unfortunately, is that within these different categories of workouts, and I would say that cluster training belongs to strength training to the same category, that you will see very significant differences between those. This has not been confirmed by the study, unfortunately. If you take into consideration that even doing things differently, just because you're doing things differently, can sometimes give you a major benefit, I would still suggest that you actually try this. It's also quite fun to do the clustering. I personally think, at least, that it's quite fun. It can, obviously, as part of your periodization cycle, can be very beneficial. Still, even if in this case it didn't provide a really new stimulus. I mean, for many, this could be one of the few training techniques that are really different from what they are usually doing. And based on my own experience, it's not just the soreness that's going to tell you that doing new things is productive, but also the results you see after a few weeks. If you always stick to the same plan, it sooner or later becomes a bit less efficient. That doesn't mean you are not progressing. I mean, all the subjects in the study at hand progress. But it can be this eventually important extra 5% or so you can get from simply switching things up.
Well, and I'll tell you something. So when I embarked on that experiment, I was only able to pull 405 for 5 reps at that point in time. And so I started doing the, and actually, as I recall, I started out at 45 seconds rest. And I did this for 16 weeks. And at the end of the 16 weeks, I was able to do 405 for 10 reps consistently. And in fact, my top lift went up dramatically. This is not a very popular approach to training because it's a very, very slow, methodical approach to just shaving like 5 seconds off each week to 2 weeks, depending on how you feel, how strong you feel you're getting. But the end result is that you will be able to take a weight that maybe you can only do 3 or 4 reps with and do 10 reps with it. And that's significant. That's a significant gain in strength that then makes your top lift go up dramatically as well.
Yeah. It is, and I personally also have experienced a significant strength gain, and what I personally also like is that if you do it this way, you have you have this built-in progression where there's really no way of evading progress. Because I know that for myself, this is always this, well, it's probably just not today. Next workout, I will add another pound or whatever to the bar. There are no real excuses if you program your workout like that. And the advantages you are going to see are also very motivating, and they're going to get you back to the gym and try to push at least a bit faster and rest at least a bit less.
Yeah.
And I think it is also maybe easier to strip 5 seconds from the rest you take than to add another 1 pound only to the bar. Because sometimes it's really crazy that you are at those sticking points where you can't add 1 pound, and or when you add it, you can't really push the bar up again, while changing the rest times is much less effect on how many repetitions you can perform or which weight you can use.
Right.
So maybe this is simply a good way to progress on something else, which is whether or not you rest and how long you rest between the individual repetitions.
And you know what? I forgot about this until we were talking about cluster training, and I'm actually going to initiate this. Tomorrow I have to go to the gym and train upper body. I may actually split upper body into a separate chest and back day. And I think that I'm going to, especially because I have this tricep that is recovering, and I think I'm going to embark on a 16-week protocol with a pressing movement where I will rest for some amount between 30 and 45 seconds. I'll use a weight that I can only get a few reps with, and just see how far, if I can get to that 10 reps. And if I can get to that 10 reps with 45 seconds of rest, I'll do that for a couple weeks, and then I'll shave 5 seconds off. And it's, you know, and the thing about this approach is when you first start doing it, you don't really feel like you're progressing. You're like, oh, 5 seconds, you know. And then another 5 seconds. It doesn't, but when you get around the midpoint, when now you're starting to pull this weight or push this weight for 20 seconds, now it's almost getting like reps now, because if you're doing a deadlift, you just have enough time to stand up, take a few breaths, get back down, grab the bar and pull it. And now all of a sudden you start working, and and the last 30%, 40% of progression, you're really working until you actually end up doing 10 consecutive reps and whatever it is you're shooting for. There's nothing more gratifying. It's a really great program. You know what? I forgot about it, and I'm actually going to dust it off, and I'm going to start using it again.
So. Yeah, and another thing people will probably notice, at least for me this is the case, is that my form is improving.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I'm not necessarily, even if I don't do more repetitions, I can get more out of each set because I have perfect form and I'm much more focused on each of the individual reps than compared to the regular way of training, where you sometimes say, well, okay, there were 6 good reps, so maybe for the 7th and the 8th one, I'm going to cheat a bit.
Yes.
At least I can still squeeze them out. This is very different because you are really focusing on each of the individual repetitions. And I think that this also can contribute to increased strength gains and eventually maybe even increased hypertrophy gains. I don't think that there is going to be such a significant difference in the way it affects the muscle into other muscle size compared at least to strength workouts.
But you also have the
possibility to include both.
Yes.
A classic approach and a staggered approach, or one where you actually
10 to 12 reps. 10 to 12 reps. So let's say you're opening, let's use the deadlift for a second. So you do your 10 singles of deadlifts with 30 seconds rest or 45 seconds rest in between. And then after you're done doing that, you move on to a 10 to 12 rep movement in a rowing movement. Do some up, you do some pull downs or pull ups. You do some seated rows. You're done. So you're doing the hypertrophy work after you do the central nervous system adaptation work. You know what? I'm so glad we did this show. You have no idea how excited I am about going to the gym tomorrow now.
I can understand that, yeah. It's also, motivation obviously is also going to have a positive effect. And if it motivates you to go for it.
This has been a great show. Adele, any announcements to make? Any exciting upcoming blogs that you want to tease with? Anything like that?
No, not really. The one thing I would like to point out is that it's not exactly the most exciting time of the year at the moment. I have to admit that there is not that much great new research with groundbreaking revelations. And if there is, keep in mind what we talked about before, that there are basic or fundamental truths in every science that don't usually change on a weekly basis, as it would appear if you read all the news articles from the science outlets.
Yeah, this is the summertime. People are just getting back to school. In the next couple of months, we'll start to see more things start to become published. But you're right. It's hard to even get Elisa, you know, she books all the guests for the show now. And there's so many of them that during the summer, they're on vacation. They don't check their school email. The only email address we have for them is their university email. It's like everybody disappears for the summer. It's amazing.
It is like that, yeah, correct.
Okay, so listen, I want you to stay on the line because I actually want to talk to you about something, something that Alex and I talked about the other day. And I want to, so just stay with me. Let me end the show here, okay?
All right.
So check out subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com, and we'll have more Supreme Radio tomorrow. Hope you can listen live. If you can't, there's always the podcast. And don't forget, you want to try an amazing ketone supplement that tastes great, that's convenient, and that is priced right, go to superhumanradio.com and try the 5-day experience from Keto OS. I love this stuff. I'm using it every morning to train. I can tell the difference. We'll see you about it tomorrow.